Good evening. My name is Alla Gladysheva. I am an adjunct professor at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Kaija Sarijaho has always been one of my favorite contemporary composers, and I am very grateful to the San Francisco Opera for trusting me to prepare this pre-opera talk on innocence. This month's performance marked the first anniversary of Kaija Sarijaho's untimely passing and third anniversary of the world premiere of Innocence in Aix-en-Provence Festival in France. The San Francisco Opera performances conclude the joint commission project from five major opera companies: Royal Opera House, Aix-en-Provence Festival, Dutch National Opera, Finnish National Opera, and San Francisco Opera. In partnership with the Metropolitan Opera, with performances scheduled in the 2025-26 season, Innocence will remain in the Met repertoire as part of its opera modernization plan of performing contemporary works. Innocence is an incredible piece of art, highly symbolic, deeply rooted in the European music tradition and cultural heritage, and yet sharply innovative. But more than that, this opera helps us to reflect on our current society and gives us a way to honestly discuss it. As Matthew Shilvek, general director of San Francisco Opera, recently wrote in the company's blog, and I quote, "Innocence is a work in which we, the audience, are invited into a subject as painful as gun violence in a way not possible in any other medium." Alexis Barrière, the author of Innocence's multilingual libretto and son of Kaija Sarijaho, in his article On the Other Side of Violence, published on the Finnish National Opera website, and now you can have it in your booklet this evening, recalls how in the spring of 2013, Kaija started to work on the commission proposal to create a piece, and I quote, "inspired by the contemporary world." Sophie Oksanen, an award-winning novelist and playwright whom Kaija Sarijaho chose to write an original libretto, asked a question about what subject has not yet been explored by opera. Quoting Alexis Barrière, "Of course, this question was about more than the allure of novelty. Operas have been written about the full range of human experience. To what contemporary phenomenon could we apply the tools of opera to expand our understanding about the ways human beings cause and feel pain and survive?" In her operatic works, Kaija Sarijaho has been recognized as a master of psychological drama. All of her previous operas have had major stage success. Her new opera was to create an opera with Her new idea was to create an opera with multiple characters facing the aftermath of a life-changing event. She called the project Fresco, drawing her inspiration from Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper, one of the most important works of art in Western culture. As a novelist, Sophie Oksanen explores the sensitive topic of how far a human being can go to adapt to violent circumstances to survive. One of her strongest narrative techniques is to unfold the story in two interlaced timelines, keeping readers constantly engaged in understanding the characters. At the time, Sophie was working on a piece which she called The Uninvited Guest, about how a past hidden crime was unexpectedly revealed at a family party. During the initial discussion, Sophie, and I'm quoting Alexis Barrière, drew an association between a group fresco and wedding photos where solemn faces conceal hidden family drama. At that same time, Alexis Barrière was working on a project with his colleague, French conductor Maestro Clément Maotakas, whom you will see conducting tonight's performance and all the performances in this run of Innocence. The project was a performance of Gustav Mahler's Kindertotenlieder, Songs of the Death of Children, set as a tribute to the victims of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. This contributed to Sophie Oksanen's decision to base the libretto on two events separated by a decade, a school massacre and a wedding. The unexpected collision of these two timelines sparks the characters to admit to and absolve themselves in their guilt and grief. For the event of the school massacre, two of which has unfortunately happened in Finland in 2007 and 2008, Oksanen created a symbolic place, an international high school in Helsinki. The shooter, as he committed the crime being underaged, is released from prison right before the wedding of his younger brother, Thomas, and it happened 10 years after the shooting. The shooter, who is referred to on stage only as the firstborn, is not allowed at the wedding. After much discussion, his family has decided to hide his very existence from the bride. Stella, the bride, is from Romania. She has been deprived of love and family all her life, her mother having abandoned her in an orphanage. So for Stella, having a family is a dream come true. For Thomas, the bridegroom, the creation of his own family means breaking free from the burden of his doomed life. In Finnish, Thomas's name means twin, alluding to his inextricable connection to his brother. And Stella means star in many languages, symbolizing light in the darkness. For Thomas's parents, Patricia and Henrik, and their names mean noble and home ruler, the wedding is a chance for a happier future. The very small and modest wedding is carefully planned and almost symbolic in the number of guests. Only a family priest represents the family's past life. At first, everyone seems to be happy and genuinely excited, but there is somehow a strange and artificial excitement, and soon we discover why. A waitress, not one who was planned, but a last-minute substitute, recognizes the family she is serving. The waitress, Teresa, and it's another symbolic name, is the mother of the shooter's classmate. In fact, her daughter, Marketa, in jacket's pearl, was a victim of that massacre. Teresa's life remains frozen in the day of the shooting. Every day at 6, she drives to the music school her daughter attended and waits for the end of the lesson she isn't taking. And on the way home, she buys Marketa's favorite apples. Every year on Marketa's birthday, she gets her a present. In the 10 years between the shooting and the wedding, Teresa has changed so much that Henrik and Patricia do not recognize her. Teresa is grieving, and despite her compassion for Stella, she is firm in her decision to reveal the truth about Thomas's family. When Stella learns the truth about her soon-to-be family's history, the priest attempts to repair the trust between her and Thomas by asking them to open their hearts to the love they have for each other. Stella is ready to accept Thomas, but he refuses her generosity and confesses his involvement in the events that happened 10 years prior. School shootings in countries with permissive gun laws are a terrifying reality. But society in any country has always dealt with the problem of violence in many forms among young people. As the story unfolds, we learn that the fatal act of violence has resulted from a year-long collective art of violence, bullying. We realize how little we know about our children's world, how shallow our understanding of them really is, and how our good intentions can pave the road to tragedy. The adults in the lives of the teenagers all share in the blame. The priest, and it is not a coincidence that he has no given name in this opera, reflects upon his lack of action, which contributed to the shooting. The teacher, Cecilia, an incredibly dedicated person who cares deeply about her students, realizes after the shooting that she has failed by not being able to understand her students' psychological world and the dynamics of their relationships. Both mothers, Patricia and Teresa, have idealized the children rather than truly understanding them. in the pivotal climactic scene in the aftermath timeline, the one related to the massacre, we are faced with a merciless image of ourselves as a society which is failing emotionally, socially, and politically in this respect. As work on the opera progressed, and I'm quoting Alexis Barrière, we were seeing the birth of innocence, a drama of 13 people's guilt and self-recrimination, each the prisoner of the isolation of their own trauma, while simultaneously bound to the others through their shared trauma. To preserve the psychological truth of the characters, Alexis suggested that some of the students' roles be played by actors. This also enables the use of a larger amount of text and further variety of musical textures. Kaya Sarjaha crafted speaking lines which are precisely measured rhythmically and prosodically over the orchestra and chorus, portraying individual musical characteristics. Please play clip number one.
Que vuelo pintura fresca, mi mujer no entiende por qué retraso la remodelación de nuestra casa. Es que soy un flojo y que soy poco hombre.
Vor 10 Jahren war ich etwas fülliger als heute. Ich trug eine Brille und hatte blondes Haar. Jetzt trage ich Kontaktlinsen und mein Haar ist schwarz und niemand.
All the characters in both story timelines have a unique combination of musical language elements. We hear that mostly in the vocal lines, of course, but as well as in the orchestra timbres and in the recurring short melodic motives or leitmotifs. Kaya Sarjaha used operatic voices for the wedding scenes and mostly spoken voices in the scenes of the massacre story. Additionally, Kaya Sarjaha has used two other types of vocal techniques for two specific characters, the teacher and Marketa. The vocal style of the teacher's role is called Sprechstimme or Sprechgesang, which is a dramatically exaggerated recitation of someone in the most critical emotional state. Sprechstimme was created in the post-romantic period and was used in a style called musical expressionism by composers such as Arnold Schoenberg and Alban Berg. If you have listened to Schoenberg's Pierrot Lunaire or to Berg's opera Wozzeck, you will recognize this style. If not, the way that teacher sings is a perfect example of Sprechstimme. Marketa, as we know, is alive only in her mother's consciousness. She is beyond the world of living. The sound of her voice is neither speaking, nor operatic, nor Sprechstimme, and uses a technique much more ancient, like folk singing, without vibrato. To find this style, Kaya Sarjaha met with Finnish artist and Finno-Ugric music researcher Vilma Jaa, whom you will hear in this performance. Vilma demonstrated various nasal folk singing techniques, including an ancient voice breaking technique, which comes from Vienan or Northern Karelia and Sami tribes. It's called Joik or Joiku. Please play clip number two. Joik, in its highest register, was used for herding calls and for scaring away predators. These can be improvised calls, and Kaya Sarjaha has indicated several cadences for Vilma to express Marketa's momentary emotions on stage, which certainly makes each performance of Innocence unique. As the composition of the opera was reaching its final stage, the music was presented live to the creative team, the director and designers, here in San Francisco. In the fall of 2018, Matthew Schildek offered a few sessions of orchestra reading. I'm now quoting Matthew Schildek. Kaya flew to San Francisco along with Kleman Mao Takash, who will be conducting the piece here, and they worked with the orchestra, bringing her transcendent music to life for the very first time. In one of the conversations about innocence, Kaya Sarriaha recalled that she envisioned having all of the characters on stage simultaneously. Stage director Simon Stone suggested a revolving set, and then the set and lighting designers Chloe Lamford and James Farncombe created a structure which precisely tracks the music of the opera. The work of choreographer Arco Renz shows movements that range from realistic to exaggerated in an extraordinary effective way. The characters each move at their own speed, aligning with their music and showing us even greater depth than the text and music alone. The costumes by designer Mel Page support both the realism of the scenes and the stark realities underneath. The costumes reflect the tropes of each character on the surface, such as teenager's outfit or wedding dresses, underscoring the normalcy of these characters and how the tragic reality can easily belong to any of us. The contrasts in the lighting seem to illuminate the character's subconscious, and they too reflect us back to ourselves. Sometimes, very literally, you will catch reflections from the set into the house. It's very impressive. Kaya Sarriaha, who herself was an educated designer, considered the result of these features to be extraordinary. Each of us will have our own symbolic interpretation of this set. To me, the constantly changing and morphing space compartments inside the planet-like revolutions alludes to being caught in a vortex which consumes the characters and the audience into the depths of this tragedy. The role of the chorus in Innocence resembles, in my opinion, the role of the chorus in ancient Greek tragedy. The chorus score of Innocence is extremely complicated, but the effect is unforgettable, especially when the chorus's music highlights the thoughts of Teresa and Cecilia, and most unforgettable and chilling in the scenes which take us to the days of and after shooting. As we learn the names of the massacre victims, the chorus mournfully recites them throughout several following scenes, including the wedding ones, adding polyphonic effect and psychological depth to the confessions of the characters. We must acknowledge the tremendous work of the San Francisco Opera Chorus and its director, John Keane. In fact, the entire team putting together this production is nothing short of world class. Maestro Kleman Mao Takash, who is leading all the performances in San Francisco, also conducted Innocence at the Finnish National Opera. He is a versatile musician and arts advocate, and his extensive repertoire includes many works of Kaya Sarriaha, including the chamber version of her oratorio La Passion de Simon. The cast you will experience tonight is stellar. Most of this international cast have performed Innocence at the world premiere. And the roles of Teresa, Thomas, Patricia, Henrik, and Priest are specially prepared for the United States premiere here in San Francisco Opera. It is an incredibly hard task not to only perform this complex music, but also to bring the difficult emotions of the piece into sharp focus. This is an area of expertise for the revival director of this production, Louise Becker. It is also important to acknowledge the San Francisco Opera artists who are covering all 13 leading roles, and of course the stage crew, whose hard work and skill is showcased in every production here at San Francisco Opera. The musical language of Kaya Sarriaha, as she always emphasized, is based on the exploration of the elements of sound itself, its timbre and color, its acoustics and resonance. Inheriting from the composers of the past who have been driven by this concept, Kaya Sarriaha became one of the most successful contemporary artists to explore the endless possibilities of the psychoacoustical phenomenon of the music sound. Quite frequently, she was using electronic music techniques to enhance the timbre experience. In The Score of Innocence, Sarriaha uses only acoustic orchestral instruments, but in the notation, she has specific symbols for sound nuances like quarter tones, trills produced by harmonics and by artificial harmonics, and instruction to, for example, how the brass instrument should imitate a sigh, or how to measure the resonance for percussion instrument and for harp, always caring, and I'm quoting Kaya Sarriaha, for the nature of the textures. The orchestra score, therefore, reflects even a micro change in the character's emotions. The intricate sound experience for us includes the coexistence of acoustic instruments and voices with amplification. This requires a highly skilled sound designer and mixing engineer. Timo Kurkikangas, who designed the sound for this production and is working right at the back of the room, is a specialist in Kaya Sarriaha's music, having worked with her since the beginning of this century. Innocence, representing the unique postmodern operatic style of Kaya Sarriaha, certainly maintains a cultural dialogue with the European operatic tradition, most notably with the French Tragédie en Musique, Tragedy in Music, and Wagner's Gesamtkunstwerk, integrated work of art, which were both intended to return to their regions of Greek tragedy, in which, according to Aristotle's poetics, all the arts should work together in service of the drama. And of course, catharsis, purification as a result and main purpose of tragedy as a genre, is what all of us on stage and in the audience are experiencing in the epilogue. We feel empathy for the characters of Innocence and leave this unforgettable performance with the understanding that we have to be honest with ourselves about what we are capable of doing to make the world safer and better for our children. Finally, it cannot be understated that this production contains depiction of the aftermath of gun violence. This is a disturbing and triggering topic, and San Francisco Opera has provided a number of resources which will take place following the performance. Immediately following the performance, there will be opportunities for reflection, grounding, and healing, and it will take place in the basement level of the restaurant and bar area, and 15 minutes right after the performance, another event, a talk back with members of the cast and creative team will happen. Additionally, an art exhibit featuring the work of artists from San Quentin State Prison is on display in the main lobby before and after each performance. If you feel compelled to take advantage of these activities, please do not hesitate to do so. Thank you very much for listening. Again, my name is Alla Gladysheva, and I work at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music.